Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. We are the show that is freeing America, one enslaved mind at a time. Thank you so much for joining us. It's a privilege and a pleasure to come before you, and we need to ask you a favor. Do the country a favor. Share these broadcasts, which are digital, far and wide. We are certainly the victims of, well, a little whitewashing from the other side, and so because they're trying to block us from waking up the people who are currently choosing to be asleep, well, ladies and gentlemen, you can undo that. So please share these broadcasts. We have a special guest today, Paul Preston of Agenda 21 Radio, and he's the president of the New California Movement, and he's going to have his fingers, I think, in my pie here in Arizona, and we're going to get into a lot of that, and we'll talk about the latest with Liz Harris. There has been an interesting development, so I'll hit you with that. But before we join Paul, I need to do a little bit of business. Right now, 18,000 cows dead. You have food processing plants being destroyed. Even Tucker Carlson's talking about it now. Ladies and gentlemen, they're choking off the food supply, both from ownership and sabotage. And you need to take corrective action. And when the war starts, the grid will go down. So then you got another problem. How are you going to get water? So let's package these two together, okay? The manufacturer is the same. We have the AlexaPure Pro Water Filter. It's number one in the industry. We'll publish the results for you on the website waterwithdave.com along with a discount. And the food, well, it's restaurant quality, 25-year shelf life, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 2,000 calories per day. And they, too, have not raised their prices. And My Patriot Supply has indeed kept the price stable, and they are also offering specials. This takes care of your two biggest needs, because I believe that the Biden communists are moving towards shutting off food and water access so they can better control you. Let's get outside the system. Go to foodwithdave.com and waterwithdave.com. That's foodwithdave.com and waterwithdave.com. And just a quick note, embedded into this broadcast, you're going to hear an ad for Noble Gold. I can't tell you how important it is for you to get away from the dollar and get as much money out of your bank and get it properly invested. And that is a key. So make sure you pay attention to that too. Well, Paul Preston's here. And Paul and I have been talking a little bit about Liz Harris, who was expelled for the crime of trying to have a guest speaker to the legislature's Select Committee on Election Integrity. She dared to say, we have some corrupt politicians in Arizona. So this report went into great detail, 120,000 pages in total. I've read a good portion of it. It's scary how far it goes. And they said, yeah, you may not have broken any laws, but you're fired. Well, one thing I want to throw out for Paul's consumption and your consumption, the Maricopa County Republicans have come out in a 3-to-1 ratio vote, said that the legislature violated protocol, should not have done what they did. They disenfranchised almost 50,000 voters in Legislative District 13 by removing Liz. And in addition, they've basically shown that you can give in to the Democrats and be a bunch of bullies and circumvent the will of the people. And I would add to this, and also they're protecting their own from the crimes and high treason that they're involved in. It's everybody from Doug Ducey to the Maricopa County Board of Supervisors to Sheriff Paul Penzone and his role in the election codes. And Katie Hobbit was named as receiving $500,000 of laundered money from the Sinaloas. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then the documentation's solid. I've seen the affidavits. And Adrian Fontes, who Paul can talk about, he's a criminal, too. In my opinion, by the way, he represented the cartel people who killed Border Patrol agent Brian Terry. And that led to the discovery of the Fast and Furious scandal. Fontes is deep into dealing with these people, and Paul knows all about that. In fact, actually, Paul really illuminated me on how far it goes. So, Paul, that's the latest. Liz and I are speaking to the Arizona Tea Party. I was originally scheduled to speak alone, and I've been in contact with Liz, and I said, Liz, your story is too important. Let's do a joint presentation, and so we're going to be working on that. So anyway, Paul, welcome to the show.
Well, Dave, thanks for having me. Wonderful to be here.
Okay, can you give me just a little more volume on your end, just a tad?
How's that? Is that better?
Much better, thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, all right. So I'm really glad you're here. You've done yeoman work. You've recognized in California The communists are in charge. They're traitors to the Constitution, to the Republic. They hate the American people. They're immoral as hell. You could even classify a lot of them as satanic. And you've been trying to separate California into two separate states for a number of years. How, first of all, let's talk about how's that going?
Well, it's going quite well. Actually, since I think the last time I was on, we were staring down the pipe at the 10th Constitutional Convention in January, and which we did have, and we had Laura Logan on. She was the one who really focused a lot of our attention on what's going on at the border, the slave trading that goes on at the border, is really what we're seeing here. This is actual slave trading, folks. And but you can't put it any other way. We are the largest slave trading country in the world, thanks to Joe Biden, thanks to other people, and many Republicans, by the way, who are buying into it. There's lots of money to be made in the trafficking of little girls and little boys and even babies for sexual reasons for some of these perverts in the Democratic Party. That's kind of the way it is. There's billions upon billions of dollars. And so when you the bottom line is when you buy and sell a human being, it's called slaving.
Yeah.
And this goes on by the thousands now at the border. And the of course, who's gaining benefit are a lot of your NGOs and nonprofits and certainly a lot of government officials. That leads to, of course, money laundering and a whole other range of things. So things are starting to unravel out here in California for a lot of reasons. And we, of course, in the New California State Movement stand absolutely opposed to any of this. And that's why in our 10th Constitutional Convention with Laura Logan, it was just a barn burner. Now we've moved on to Congress, and we've actually sent delegates to Congress on behalf of the 51st state, New California State, and we've delivered our paperwork to Senator McCarthy, and we have other things planned. I can't really talk about some of the details, but we are sending more delegates, so that'll be this month and next month.
Yeah, I know you can't, but let me see if I can't connect a dot here that maybe you can comment on, and it's this. Marjorie Taylor Greene, about 5 or 6 weeks ago, made a very curious comment without a lot of rhetoric behind it. She said, it might be time for a divorce in America. Now, I know I'm paraphrasing, but that's effectively what she said. Could that be in reference to what you're doing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I met Marjorie Taylor Greene. I have a great picture. I spent about 30 minutes talking to her at the Moment of Truth conference back in Missouri, and I think that was in August. And, you know, told her who I was and what we were doing and stuff, and she'd heard about it. I think that what she's talking about is some people, when they are first introduced to the statehood process, they're kind of awkward and they don't know what to say and what the language should be. Mm-hmm. I'm having a radio talk show host on my show tomorrow who's made this similar statements, and, somebody was complaining. One of his listeners was complaining that he didn't know what he was talking about. You need to talk to Paul Preston to find out what it's like when you split a state. So they did.
What hour are you having him on?
8 o'clock. 8 o'clock tomorrow morning.
I think I know who that person is.
Yeah, he wants a national divorce. Anyway, that's an interesting conversation. Okay. Because there's so many bad words associated with it, like the word secessionist. Yeah. And that is actually a bad word if you're talking about being a secessionist, because the government views you as a terrorist. I'm sure a lot of people don't know that. But we don't use that word, of course. We don't use the word secessionist. It was a word that was invented in 1850, actually, with the Great Compromise, which brought California in as a state to the Union, because the southern states did not want a free state out of California. They wanted a slave state. Isn't that interesting? Now, here we come, New California, and we're trying to shed the notion of a slave state, which is what California has already become, just like the nation. But anyway, so a lot of people feel a little awkward, I think, about the terminology, and I think that's probably what, in the case of Marjorie Taylor Greene, she didn't quite have her words down. And we're trying to train people in Congress right now, Dave, in what is the vernacular, what are the words that you use when you're talking about a state split, such as what we're doing. So I applaud her for the notion. The other guy I'm not too sure of. I think he's just, I don't know if he wants to play on the hype and hysteria, but we're not trying to secede from the Union. No, California is, and we're trying to stop that, actually. They're the ones actually trying to secede to create a new nation.
I covered that extensively several years ago.
Yep. Yeah, that's right. I mean, you and myself and other people were talking about it. It's obvious. They want to become their own nation. That started with Jerry. Well, it started a long time ago, but Jerry Brown really thought he was El Presidente of California. I was driving that one home. That was one of the things that started our whole rock and roll with New California, was the fact he wanted to create a new nation. And with the help of China, of course, and the cartels, of course. So here we have it today with New California on the verge of becoming the 51st state. And that's a fact. I say 12 to 14 months will be a new state.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's absolutely amazing. You know, I made a comment last night. I was talking with my broadcast partner, Doug Thornton, former DHS supervisor, and I said, you know, if Paul's not successful, I said, only in my opinion, I said, he's never said this, but I said, only in my opinion, anyone who's going after any kind of movement to separate themselves from a communist takeover of their state, I said, whether or not Congress or the president approves it, they should just do it. The counties should just retain their own money, not pay it to the state.
Right.
And then form your own confederation. Have you ever had any discussions along those lines?
Yeah, our whole objective in all this is to return autonomy back to the counties and have each one as an independent autonomous state, which is the way it usually is. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to be. The state government should also not be a government in which you have centralized power, which in California, they went through the education system starting in the 70s, 80s, and 90s to really bring power in from the education system into one location from all the counties into the Department of Education in Sacramento. And they did. And then the next step was, of course, to turn over the rights of education to the federal government, which was, of course, race to the top legislation. Schwarzenegger signed the bill that would bring about race to the top legislation, which required that the state actually had to give up its 10th Amendment right to educate the children and turn it over to the federal government. That happened in 2018. Now we're 13 years into federal control, and look at what we have of education.
Well, the Department of Education at the federal level is wholly unconstitutional. It's not a constitutional power. It's like what Roe v. Wade ruled on when they said we can't make a decision on abortion because it's not a federally protected right. Well, the Department of Education is state mandated. It's not federally mandated.
That's correct. And so they have a little, you know, as long as we are allowing this to go on, it's going to continue to go on. But you see, in the case of New California, we take that back. We also take back the idea that senators cannot be elected by way of their own county, state senators now I'm referring to. Right now you have, in most of your legislatures, you have a unicameral situation. You don't have bicameralism, which means you have senators and representatives that are separated by different bodies and equal, they're co-equal power sharing. That's not the case anymore, because it used to be the senators would represent their sovereign state, you know, their sovereign county, which meant they represented everything within the county, such as Department of Education, finance, county supervisors, district attorneys, sheriffs, all the elements that make resources, you know, gold, silver, whatever you have, lumber, whatever you have. Those are all encompassed by the county senator for every county. Reynolds versus Sims in 1964 did away with that and said that senators had to be representing people only. Well, you know, you had a House of Representatives in every state. They represented the people. Now, of course, you have senators representing people also, not the resources of rural areas in particular. So you can see there's no representation for rural areas. We bring that back. We're taking that back also. That's a 10th Amendment, right? And we're taking that back. So we're getting two things, Department of Education and the right, in other words, we're retrieving that right to educate our kids, and we're retrieving the right to have a sovereign elected state senators. And right now, when our configuration for New California is, we actually assigned every county has a senator, and that's our Senate. We have 56 seats in our Senate for 56 counties that we have involved with New California.
You mean no gerrymandering?
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
No.
If you have 1% senator, there's no gerrymandering. The lines have already been established.
What happens is that if you have the senators as they are now, they're based upon population. We have 40 senators. We have approximately 40 million people. So you can see that to make up the distance, some of your counties have obviously different amounts of people in them. Brian Daly, who ran for governor against Jerry Brown, or excuse me, for Gavin Newsom, he represents, are you ready for this, 11 counties to make up that 1 million population. 11 counties, Dave. So in the whole of rural area of California, which is what we are, 90% of the landmass, you have 7 senators representing that area. And the rest of the senators represent Sacramento, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. So 33 senators represent those areas.
I hear you, but we know how the communists took over in California. You know, California used to be the innovator for everything. If you want to know what's coming in the future, watch California. Well, that's still true, but now it's in a negative light.
Absolutely. You want to watch what's happening in terms of communism and totalitarianism. Just watch what they're doing out here. Yeah, it's textbook. And, of course, you have so many players that are involved in it. The corruption is just obscene. To clean up California, if it was left to be in its own natural state, would take 150 years easily if it was to get back to normal again.
How many illegal aliens are going to be able to vote in your next election?
100% of them, as far as I know.
Yeah, that was the answer I was looking for, because that's what my understanding is, that's exactly what it is, and that's not hyperbole. And to me, it's just an absolute travesty that we're letting foreigners come in and participate in our system. By the way, you have a ex-California official that you're very familiar with who's preparing to steal about $18.6 billion from the American taxpayer in the form of funding DACA, free health care. Do you know about that? Javier Becerra.
Javier Becerra, right. He's a real piece of work. He's a well-trained Jesuit attorney who was a senator or assembly member, excuse me, House of Representatives in 2004. He has a great distinction to have hired the Juan brothers. Remember the W. Wasserman Schultz situation?
Oh, you mean the Bleacher guys?
Bleacher guys, yeah. Right. He hired them to work in the House of Representatives under his tutelage back in 2004. And basically ran an espionage ring out of the House of Representatives with the Awan brothers and Debbie Wasserman Schultz help, sending all types of information, top secret information, back to Pakistan. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is that, you know, your members of the House of Representatives and other delegate representatives, they don't have to have a security clearance. They can sit on these military committees and listen to top secret information, get all the data pieces, get all the notes, get everything that comes right from the Pentagon. No problem at all. They can package it up and ship it off all day long, and there's no repercussions to them. None. And it's interesting. Trevor Loudon is now making the tour, which is good. Trevor Loudon's going to be at our convention. But
when is that convention, Paul?
Convention is May 10th or 12th and 13th.
Oh my gosh, if I wasn't committed out of state, I would come. Oh, Trevor Loudon's one of my favorites. He's right. Just for the audience consumption, and I'm speaking from memory without my notes, but Trevor Loudon exposed Democratic representatives in Congress and also the Senate. Kamala Harris was one of them. Al Franken was another. These are names that come to my mind, but they were members of either the American Communist Party or front groups for the American Communist Party, and a lot of it's on tape.
That's right. No, it's all proven. You know, and he's written additional books now. He's got a couple of books out about the communists in the Senate, the U.S. Senate. And
you mean like Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, Mitch McConnell, boy, isn't
he? He doesn't even hide it. I mean, his in-laws control the 6 major ports in China, and he makes $25 million a year, which is why China's going to run over Taiwan, because he'll block anything to help Taiwan.
Yeah, yeah. And, of course, I guess, you know, he's struggling because he got something happened where he fell on his face in the Trump Hotel. That's not Trump anymore. But down there in Washington, D.C., I guess, I don't know, he's a member of the Black Eye Club, I think. And he may be stepping down.
Talk about that Black Eye Club. I know what you mean. I don't think the audience does.
Well, there's a group of people running around And we know, I mean, you can almost figure it out what senators and what members of the House and other government officials are, like presidents. I think George Bush the Younger was a member of the Black Eye Club. This is what it is that every once in a while, if you're not toeing the line, somebody comes along and corrects you, and they give you that big black eye. And this is no joke. I think everybody has seen this. You got a whole bunch of members that have joined that club just to stay in line. I think Kerry was one and Bush was one. And now you have Mitch McConnell and even Harry Reid. Remember Harry Reid?
Oh, he had two. Yeah. I know Harry Reid. Ultimate traitor. Assisted Hillary Clinton with extracting uranium. Nuclear grade uranium to give to the Russians off BLM land. That Harry Reid,
okay.
Helping the Clinton Foundation, and that's what led to the Cliven Bundy stand down.
That's right. Yep. And we invited Cliven Bundy to come out and speak out here in Yuba City, California, and that set a lot of people off. And then, of course, the whole thing with Lavoie Finicum, which is up in Oregon, and the Malheur, where you have a lot of thorium. A pretty interesting resource, thorium. It's one of the, it is a clean nuclear energy, which doesn't give off radioactivity. And, that's pretty neat. Thorium is number 90 on the periodic table of the elements. And, there's people now processing it and attempting it to, turn it into nuclear reactors with, clean energy.
You know, since we're talking about, we brought up the Clinton Foundation extracting nuclear grade uranium and giving it to the Russians, or selling it to the Russians, I should say. You know who delivered, I've got two documents to this, one from Russia and one from the State Department. You know who delivered the first batch? This is a quiz question.
I can't remember. I think I've reported it, but I can't remember.
Yeah, well, I know. We have so much that comes at us. I get these brain farts too, Paul. So don't feel like the Lone Ranger. I'm right there. But no, it was Mueller, the person who was heading up the Russia investigation and helped lead to the demise of General Flynn on total BS. And he was there on the tarmac delivering it to the Russians. We have the Rostov memo from Russia, and we have a State Department memo, and I can't believe this got leaked, but it's legitimate. If people, you want to research that, just simply go to thecommonsenseshow.com and use our search engine. I've left it up.
Well, you know, here's the other. There's a picture of Mueller, I believe, in the Ukraine.
It's all part of the same operation.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. And I know we're digressing here because I want to come back to the election stuff in New California. But I reported in 2014 that Devin Archer and Hunter Biden accompanied, and I know you know this story, Air Force Two. They were on Air Force Two taking a pathological, biological sample of an unknown origin. And I didn't know then what I think I know now, which I'm pretty sure it was COVID. And they developed the weaponization of this. And Hunter accompanied all this. And what's interesting is you know the story. Tell the audience what happened to the crew of Air Force Two and associated with this.
They're all dead.
Yeah.
And I don't want to reveal my source, but they're all dead. And many of the surrounding crew or Secret Service people are dead. Oddly enough, they all committed suicide the same way with a gun. And it's very obvious that no one wanted to find out where they had been because they were the only people who could tell you where they had been. And our own Chris Street was tracking the aircraft at the time. We have a pretty good record of where they went.
And Wuhan Lab, my friend.
Absolutely. Yeah. Wuhan Lab and that whole mess, that whole thing was, as you said, that's one of the reasons that they were doing the things that they were doing, especially with Anthony Fauci. They're also delivering rocket motors and rocket equipment, if you will, to North Korea. North Korea was buying several of the rocket motors that were left over from old Soviet Union stocks. Remember, it was the Ukraine that was basically the space center for Russia at the time. And they had built all the different rocket motors. We were buying them for NASA to use as dependable rocket motors. But they traveled all around the world, Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, but mostly Hunter Biden. It was like his own private jet.
No, Air Force Two was his own private jet. There's no question. Yeah. You know, I don't know if we've ever talked about this, but I have. I'm sorry, Paul. Go ahead.
Let's define this. Air Force Two is actually Air Force One, but when the vice president's on it, it's called Air Force Two.
Exactly.
It's the same 747. It's not a little luxury Learjet or anything.
Okay, I get it. I don't know if I ever shared this with you or we ever talked about it, but it was early in 2016. Obama was still in office. This is now election year, and this is probably, 8, 9, 10 months before the election. Obama brings in Ukrainian prosecutors, and he did seminars at various locations, and he used various officials in his administrations from various departments. I have the entire list. I have their itinerary. I know the last leg of their trip to D.C. was through Frankfurt, Germany. And I know who gave the presentations and when they gave them. I published all this. It's on my website. And what the sum and substance was of this is these officials from the Obama administration were educating these Ukrainian prosecutors on how to prosecute Burisma and Rosemont Seneca without ensnaring American politicians or family members.
Sure.
Did you know that?
Yeah, I heard that, yeah.
Yeah,
from Dave Hodges.
Well, I got it off of Scribd. Interesting enough, it was a government document on Scribd. It's now scrubbed, but it's authentic and it happened. And the thing is this is how I look at this. Obama thought Hillary was going to succeed, follow him into office. They thought that was going to be the order. But just in case, we better cover our you-know-whats in Ukraine. And that's what that conference, it was a week-long conference, so it was a Monday through Friday. And that's what that was about, Paul. It was about CYA, about what they were up to in Ukraine. But anyway, let's move away from that corruption. I want to come back to the Liz Harris situation. Have you had time to look at Liz's situation and what's happened and what she stands for?
And of course I'm very familiar with the hearing that was put on that day with, I can't remember, Brecker, I think her last name was?
Brager, yeah, Jacqueline Brager, right. Yeah, of the Thaler Harris Law Firm.
Right, and I'm very familiar with that now. I bought his book, actually, one about the collapse of California, which was printed in 1996, and it's very, very accurate, I might add. I purchased that book and I watched this. I basically made everybody in New California watch it, because there's a lot of the same things that go on here. In fact, she said that much of this was really the offshoot of California. It had already been happening out here. We had just gotten involved, in a situation in one of our counties where, 2 days before this event, we got a call from a couple that wanted help. Now we get calls as New California people thinking, can New California help us? Cause the state's not, right? And, so this couple called, they had a property. It's worth about $500,000 and it's a nice property, nice neighborhood, nice everything. And they had paid the thing completely off. They didn't know anything. All of a sudden they get a knock at the door one day and it's the sheriff saying, here's your eviction notice. And they go, what? Why? Because you've missed your payments. They've been trying to get a hold of you for 6 months and you've missed your payments. And so now you're being evicted. And they go, well, we own this property. Well, not according to this. And what had happened was somebody had gone down and filed a loan against the property and they didn't know about it because the clerk recorder doesn't have any responsibility to tell the homeowner. And so, there was a loan there and there was no payment on the loan because the person didn't know about the loan. And so 6 months later, they put it up in foreclosure. They run the foreclosure sale, and somebody bought it. And they were just stunned. Well, they left the house. They should never have left the house. Of course, they called us too late. But they left the house, and the story is, of course, that a real estate broker picked up the property for, like, nothing, like $10 or something. And he wasn't even a broker. But he put it on the market and sold it. And he sold it to somebody for about $500,000. And, of course, now another person is living in the house, just exactly like, Brecker had said. It's exactly the same sort of thing. And then we started getting other calls. We had gotten some other calls. We hadn't quite figured out what was going on, but they were along the same lines. And then all of a sudden we started auto-dotting all this and saying, oh, my God, this is here. And, of course, it's all run by the cartels. It's the same cartel situation as what we have, what you have out there and what she described, identical out here in California.
Wow. So all I got to say is, wow, it's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, and I think that when I thought, well, what a great service that was that she got up and spoke, and I guess there's now been this big brouhaha about Liz Harris. You know, I kept wondering, you know, because I've been on those committees before, and I've held we've chaired committee hearings here in New California State, and the person who moderates, of course, the head of the chair should always be aware of who the guests are. Unless they're just doing an open call and you can, anybody has an opinion. But in this particular case, she was brought in as a witness, invited. Liz Harris had invited her, but that has to come from the chair. I don't know why they didn't shut this woman down to begin with. I'm glad they didn't. But, if I would have been there, to me, there's a lot of personal stuff that shouldn't have been out there, but that's the responsibility of the chair. And I kept telling myself, why is this chair allowing this to happen?
So how is it that Liz gets expelled for the legislature and the chair allowed this to go on and no ramifications there?
Liz had every right to do that. It should have been. And in fact, some of these guys that if you watch the hearing, some of these guys started to figure out maybe we shouldn't be hearing this, some of this stuff. But, you
I
know,
heard that.
The chair should have come in. And at times when there were things that were inappropriate, told her to stop and say, can you say that differently? Because that's, you know, going overboard and it's too much, you know, information or it's too confidential for this hearing because it's a public hearing. Can you rearrange it? Can you say something different? Correct her. But to allow it to go on like that, to me, I think they were, it was a trap, I think, for Liz Harrison.
Oh, my goodness. I've got to be careful what I say here, and I'm going to let Liz fully tell the story. But Liz knows that there were statements made about her prior to the swearing in, that if she dares to bring up voter integrity issues, they're going to expel her. She knows this. I know a little detail. I don't know a lot of detail, but I'm going to let Liz tell that story when she comes on my show, because I don't want to speak for her and get it wrong. But that's really interesting. So, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You have, yeah. I mean, first of all, the chair, Liz says, I want this person to speak. The chair has the right to say yay or nay. And then when
Correct.
It starts to go sideways in the opinion of the chair, they can shut it down. And it's so Correct. Egregious, they kick Liz out of the House of Representatives, but nothing happens to the chair who let it go on.
Right.
Okay, I think I got it, Paul.
It's her fault. It has nothing to do with Liz. It is the chair's fault. The chair, or just let it stand. You know, just let it stand. And that's what they did. They just let it stand. That's on them. That's not on Liz.
Yeah, so Mr. Chair, let it go on, and then we got Liz.
That's right.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with Liz. Liz just brought her, she brought her witness forward. That's what witnesses do. That you have to correct the witness. You hear this all the time just watch the congressional hearings. There's always an admonishment of a witness, always, and they're given strict parameters. Oftentimes, even before they speak, you know, they're invited to put in a written statement. The whole thing was kind of bungled badly, I think, by the chair and by that committee.
It was bungled. I think it was a plot. The way you're describing it. The chair knew what their responsibility was. And if you go after Liz, you damn well got to go after the chair.
That's right. And, you know, if you go back and look at the final part of it, you can hear those guys talking. And at least two of those senators were not happy with what they were hearing. And they were saying, maybe we should not hear this right now. And this is, and they were right. I mean, in my opinion, as I was listening to the witness, I would have corrected her numerous times. And maybe the first time would have been enough for her to, you know, leave out some language. Some language. I wouldn't say all of it. But that should have happened. And that didn't happen. And that's not Liz's fault. I didn't see Liz chairing the meeting. Did you?
No. No, in fact, she was fairly silent. And that's been my point here all along when I've talked about this publicly. I said, I watched that hearing. I said, you're killing one of the messengers sitting on a committee as opposed to going after the fact that they let this go on. They have no one to blame but themselves. And I didn't make that connection about the chair, but I know Liz wasn't the chair. So that's interesting. Congratulations for pulling that together. You're exactly right. Now, I want to make sure that everyone understands this. 2 days, Liz had the hearing Saturday night. Yes, Saturday night. She was interviewed on Zoom by the Maricopa County voters. And I have, Liz texted me the findings. And they vilified the legislature. Disenfranchisement of voters, 43,000 voters in Legislative District 13. And there were some real implications there they didn't touch, but they stopped just short of getting into due process issues and so forth, and being bullied by the Democrats. And yet when the shoe's on the other foot, the Democrats come in and criticize the Republicans in really an unsavory way. Nothing happens to them. But, you know, here's what this exposed. There were 18 Republicans that voted against Liz. And all I'm going to say are two names here, Bill Gates and Stephen Reicher. Now, they're not members of the legislature. Bill Gates, at the time of the election, in which in Maricopa County, 61% of the Republican area voting machines went down. And by the way, Paul, they've now issued a statement said, oh, they figured out how it happened. The paper they were using was too heavy and it jammed up the printers. And I'm thinking, oh, you're telling me the Democrats in the same county didn't use the same paper? And and also, too, they're required by state law to test the machines the day before. So were they lying when they said they tested the machines, or are they lying after the fact? And this, by the way, this revelation came out 1 day before Liz's expulsion. So they carefully timed this to try to sway public opinion. That's really clear. But it's just fascinating. I'm so glad you made that connection here, because
I'm going to make a paper connection.
Yeah.
Beck runs your ballots. But I understand.
Runberg. You're talking about Runberg, I believe it is.
Runbeck.
Yeah, that's it. Yes.
Runbeck. They're over by the airport. And there's another company right around the street from them. They also print paper for your ballots. And they're a reclamation paper company. Which company did those ballots come from?
Oh, my gosh. I know you're right. Well, I can tell you this, and I'm not going to name my source yet. That source may speak out on this, so I'm not going to take their thunder. But with regard to the ballots and everything, there have been 3 untimely deaths around the time of the election and immediately after. I'm telling you, I know this for a fact. And I know who told me. I know how they found out. I'm just not going to steal their thunder because I think this is time release. But I'm just telling you, it's interesting you'd say that. There's already been controversy. I made this point, Paul, that, you know, my sister-in-law got caught up in this fraud. She tried to go vote at one center, and they couldn't print the ballots and so forth. And a lot of people went to the second center, and they were told, you're already registered. You voted. Get out of here. No, I didn't. There was a failure in the machines, and they wouldn't let a lot of these people vote by design in Republican areas.
That's right.
And so what ended up happening, though, with all this is that the I said this. I said, how does 61% of the voting machines in primarily GOP neighborhoods, how do they fail because they're not centrally connected? And you just answered the question. It's the paper that centrally connected them.
That's right.
Good job, Paul.
Right. No, well, there's a, you know, there's with me in that story, there's always something else to come.
Oh, my. Well, I can't wait to talk. Liz Harris and I are supposed to speak tonight in advance of our presentation this Wednesday, April 19th at 43rd Avenue in Bell. And yes, I will have security. And it's at the IHOP there, and I think we start, doors open at 6, and I think the presentation starts at 7, and Liz and I are working on coordinating our response to this. So if you're in Arizona and you want to see us both speak, about how corrupt our elections are, well, then that's where you want to be. This, boy, I'll tell you, Paul, I'm glad we had this talk. That I'm sure this rings a note with you when I tell you I was told three people died untimely deaths. Private airplane crashed, motorcycle accident, motorcycle accident, and I can't remember the third incident. But three people, untimely deaths.
Yeah. That's the world we live in today.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy, that's amazing. All right, so let me ask you a question here. Because I want New Arizona to start. So I want to ask a question about New California. Let's assume that the Democrats, through hook and crook and voting machines and stuffing ballot boxes, maintains control of the presidency, and you still have rhino Republicans infecting the Senate, because effectively the Senate's 69% Democrat when you factor in the number of rhinos. I went and counted it. So it's 69 to 31. So let's say they keep control of those two bodies. How do you become a state without their permission?
And you're talking about if there's, first of all, that we're a statewide, we're past the state. We, of course, did not ask permission from the state, which is, they say, is required that you get permission. The problem is that we have a state government that has left us, very similar to what happened with Virginia and West Virginia. When Virginia became part of the Confederacy, they stepped away from their constitutional responsibilities as government officials being directed by we the people. They became traitors. And so what was the response by West Virginia? Well, they went to Congress, and Congress said, you still have to satisfy Article 4, Section 3 of the Constitution. Now, what that meant and what they did is they decided, well, we're going to form a restored government of Virginia. And because we, the people of Virginia, were still there, as in the form of West Virginia, so they restored it and created a restored, reorganized government of Virginia. We did the same in California. We did this shortly right after our convention in January, and we approved these resolutions that went forward, that are now going forward to Congress as the restored government of California. So technically right now in California, there's two governments. There's a restored, reorganizing government of California, and which is the old government, symbolic of the old government, and being guided by the 1849 Constitution. That was the first thing that we resolved to do. And then the next thing is that we've moved on to Congress. So you have New California State, which is now moving on to Congress for approval, and which, like I said, we expect that that's going to be happening in at least 12 to 14 months for sure.
When you say the Congress, so let me ask you, are you talking about both houses or just the House of Representatives?
Right now, just the House of Representatives, but it will be the Senate. We're already – there's a process. We have to start with the House of Representatives. So we've started that process. And then the next thing will be getting authorization from, of course, the Senate. Authorization from the House of Representatives, and then the Senate, and then the President has to sign a proclamation granting statehood. The process only involves the legislative branch. It does not involve the executive branch. And the situation we think is perfect at this point for a state to be developed. We think that this is some of the gifts that are happening around us. McConnell is going to be stepping down. We really believe that. I think you're going to find Federer and other people are going to be stepping aside. You're actually going to find Feinstein stepping aside and perhaps Gavin Newsom taking her place, which would be kind of interesting. But I think you're going to get on the other side, on the Democrat side, at least five people that are going to vote for New California, at least five. And I can tell you there's one we've already visited her office. So she... you would not believe who this she is.
Is it a Democrat?
Democrat, right? And this Democrat is all for New California.
Why? Why are they for it?
Because they realize the situation economically. Plain and simple. It's the economics of it. Because California represents the hope and the future for a better economy for the entire nation. And right now the nation is spiraling out of control economically. The whole debt situation in California is completely bankrupt. And I mean, more thoroughly now than ever before. Its cash receipts dropped 41% in their April tax receipt, or the March tax receipts, Dave, 41%. But that doesn't even measure up to the other, you know, 60-some percent over the last 2 years. They've pushed about every business out of California to the point where there's no more taxes coming in. And they have a debt load of almost, you know, $200 billion every year. They can't suffice and make it. And so it's going to cause, obviously, great consternation. They're not going to get a bailout. They got a bailout the first time. They're not going to get one. The federal government doesn't have any money or any room to make a bailout and won't have for a long time, probably 10 years. So this bailout of California would be substantial year over year. The first part of it would be $50 billion next year. That comes down to $40 billion the year after that. It does not make any sense to go on with this type of a communist organization, a failed Republican or republic, which is a democracy. And I keep telling everybody, how's that democracy working out in California? it's a dictatorship is what it is. So this is one of the main reasons. And I'm really, I'm absolutely shocked when our person went into the office and had a great conversation with this person and, was stunned to see, well, they really want to see it happen. Like I said, they called me. I said, you got to be kidding me. So, if we've got one of those kind, I'm only leaving it up to your imagination who this woman is. I'm sure we're going to get 5 or 6 other ones. I'm almost positive of it.
You're talking like this person, like they're a household name.
They are.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. And I understand why discretion is important here. So I'm not pushing the point to say, tell us. Anyway, I think that's really interesting. But there's something else you're doing. There's two other points I want to cover before we go. Arizona is a new state, having a 52nd state. But the first thing I want to talk about here is the leverage that you're imposing here. If I were Gavin Newsom and some of these uppity Democrats that are destroying California that control your legislative branch, I would want you gone, because you're now going around to counties where officials have engaged in wrongdoing and using a process called the affidavit process to expose their criminality, and they're resigning before they have to be investigated. You want to talk about that for a minute?
Sure. Yeah, we started doing this. The first time we presented them was in 2021. In fact, June 1st, we presented declarations or affidavits. The fundamental difference between a declaration and an affidavit is an affidavit is a sworn statement in front of a not a county clerk, but a, when you sign escrow papers, who do you sign it for? A notary. You don't need a notary to do a declaration, although it has the same force in law. Yeah, it's just a little bit different way you write them, makes it a little bit easier. So declarations and affidavits, we started pushing those primarily at the clerk recorders, because we believe that there has been RICO violations, and especially RICO involving the county clerk recorders with the Secretary of State and also the governor and the Attorney General of California, both with Jerry Brown and with Gavin Newsom. And but the county clerk recorders have been the ones that have been most responsible. So we signed about 120 declarations for the county clerk recorder of San Luis Obispo. He was the first one we did it for. And we put in, there were two varieties. One was a general variety of complaint about his oath of office, and the other one was specific to his job duty. And it was interesting because we put in the actual information that we had from our people that have done the algorithms and know the exact amounts for every county, whether the way the vote worked. And so we accused him of violating his oath of office and also of voter fraud. And it was interesting because as soon as he received them, now the idea is that you present those to the government official. It's a form of grievance. It's basically the last thing that you can do in terms of a grievance. You can do public grievances, and then you can do private grievances against public officials, and that's what we're doing with these. But when we presented this individual, Tommy Gong was his name, San Luis Obispo County, he resigned in 3 days.
Yeah, I'm aware of that case.
He resigned in 3 days. And so amazing. We felt empowered, and so we started going after school board members, principals, assistant superintendents, all kinds of county supervisors up in Shasta, of course. We put declarations and affidavits in the hands of the county clerk reporter, and five of the county supervisors and other people. And so far, we've had eight people resign or leave or not run. And of that eight, we had one recall, a county supervisor who was recalled, and the other three left voluntarily. They left with out running for office again. So this has been huge. We've had several school districts in which board members have openly resigned after being delivered these documents, being accused of felonies and so on like that. We have about 50,000 of these out and about in various counties. Of course, we're a large state. You know, we have 58 counties that we're operating in. So, it's very, very effective. And then we have, of course, replacement members of the Shasta County come on board in this last election, and 3-2 they voted to kick out Dominion.
Oh, so, what a victory that is, because Dominion brings every pressure to bear to stay in a county.
That's right. Yeah. And, you know, what's happening with Dominion is they're being found out. You know, they're all being found out about more and more people aren't believing them and how this whole election fraud goes on.
More and more people aren't believing anything about the government. Okay. Right. I appreciate you explaining that. And I want to take this and selfishly turn this into Arizona. We only got about 3 minutes left, so we got to be concise. But Paul, I want you to talk about a possibility of a new Arizona movement and realize that Dave Hodges wants to be very much a part of it, because the first person I want to deliver an affidavit to is the head of the committee of which Jacqueline Brager testified to, so we can get to the bottom of what happened there, because I think it's a setup. Yep. And it's an interference in Liz's status as a member of the House. It's political interference, and we're going to start. I want to start with that person. And by the way, too, just real quickly here, in the Brager report, they have evidence of fake mortgage companies used, and the signatures have been tied to two women that have Sinaloa cartel connections, and this was already adjudicated in part in the Southern District of New York. So if we think the Brager report's full of crap, folks, some of it's already been through the judicial system.
Right.
Okay. So, Paul, tell me about New Arizona. We got 3 minutes.
New Arizona, we started up with this because I was very frustrated with what I was seeing out there with Kerry Lake and the voting and all this. It's just like California. The one thing is that we had contacted several people out there about doing declarations. They contacted us, and they kind of fell apart because there's just so many things going on, and I totally understand. Now people have kind of backed off and said, what is the methodology they're using in California to get so much success? And now they're paying attention. So we started getting more and more feelers from people about New Arizona, because they want to, you know, they can see it. And I think I've sent you some charts you can take a look
when
at.
When did you send those, Paul?
I just sent them just before airtime.
Okay,
here.
Good.
If you take a look at them, you can see that Arizona is prime to have a new state. And you'll have you'll have Phoenix left out, and you'll have Tucson left out, but everywhere else where you have Republicans. And by the way, your voting system is just equally as corrupt as everybody else, because you have electronic voting. We've run the numbers based upon the hard ballot numbers. And Arizona is a deeply red state. Kerry Lake won her election hands down, not even close. You just take a look at the ballot and how that old ballot thing worked out. It was a joke. But my point is that New Arizona is on the roll. We're putting up the website this week. We have people that have already signed up. And Dave, we really would welcome your participation in it, because this is going to send a real strong message to the rest of the nation. Not only is it California, not only is it New Nevada, but it's also New Illinois. Now it's New Arizona. And for obvious reasons, because it will correct that problem. We're seeing it correct itself right now. And we think that we're going to get more counties, or at least four more counties are going to drop Dominion. And that's going to happen real soon. You're going to start to see that. So everybody's going to go back to paper ballots, one-day voting, no 29 days before the election, no 27 days after the election. I think it's shorter for you. It's different number in Arizona. But why do you need so many days after the election? Well, I'll tell you why. It's to finish off the fraud.
Exactly. I mean, how many elections have there been? And I cited these in a recent interview with Doug Thornton. You go to bed and the Republican is ahead, and you wake up and they found ballots in the middle of the night to steal the election.
Right. And, you know, we called that on DeSantis when DeSantis was running for governor. We saw that very thing happening. What they were doing is ballot harvesting in Florida at the time. And we had a situation where they described it at a conference here. And that, in fact, it was the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco. We got the video of this. I sent the video to people, to certain people, who then pointed it out to DeSantis. You know what they did is they stopped those ballots from coming in to the counting centers in DeSantis. That's how he got it.
We are out of time. I'm sorry. We're going to have you back on because this is too important. But the reality is, please put the people in New Arizona in contact with me, and we'll devote all our resources here to this. I know Liz has a little interest in this, and I don't know the degree, but I'm going to bring that to her attention when I talk to her later tonight. But, Paul, thanks for coming on, my friend. Very, very informed. This was a great hour. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Dave.
Take care.